Star Wars, Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn. Concluded. Cassette number 11, side 2. That's what other capital ships are for, Wedge put in. But you're right, this isn't working. Han pursed his lips. R2, you still online back there? He called. The droid's beeping came faintly up the cockpit corridor. Go through your schematics again, Han ordered. See if you can find us another weak point. R2 beeped again in acknowledgement, but it wasn't a very optimistic beep. He's not going to find anything better, Han, Luke said, echoing Han's own private assessment. I don't think we've got any choice left. I'm going to have to go topside and use my lightsaber on it. That's crazy, and you know it, Han growled. Without a proper pressure suit, and with engine coolant spraying all over you if it works. How about using one of the droids? Wedge suggested. Neither of them can do it, Luke told him. R2 hasn't got the manipulative ability, and I wouldn't trust 3PO with a weapon. Especially not with all the high acceleration maneuvers we're making. What we need is a remote manipulator arm, Han said. Something that Luke could use inside while... He broke off. In a flash of inspiration, there it was, the thing that had been bothering him ever since they'd walked into this crazy battle. Lando, he called into the intercom. Lando, get up here. I've got him strapped in, Luke reminded him. Well, go unstrap him and get him up here, Han snapped. Now. Luke didn't waste time with questions. Right, he said. What is it? Wedge asked tensely. Han clenched his teeth. We were there on Nkeon when the Imperials stole these mole miners from Lando, he told the other. We had to reroute our communications through some jamming. Okay, so? So why were they jamming us? Han asked. To keep us from calling for help? From who? They're not jamming us here, you notice. I give up, Wedge said, starting to sound a little testy. Why? Because they had to. Because most of the mole miners on Nkeon were running on radio remote, came a tired voice from behind him. Han turned around to see Lando easing his way carefully into the cockpit, clearly running at half speed, but just as clearly determined to make it. Luke was right behind him, a steadying hand on his elbow. You heard all that? Han asked him. Every part that mattered, Lando said, dropping into the co-pilot seat. I could kick myself for not seeing it long ago. Me too. You remember any of the command codes? Most of them, Lando said. What do you need? We don't have time for anything fancy. Han nodded toward the frigate, now lying below them. The mole miners are still attached to the ships. Just start them all running. Lando looked at him in surprise. Start them running? He echoed. You got it, Han confirmed. All of them are going to be near a bridge or control wing. If they can burn through enough equipment and wiring, it should knock out the whole lot of them. Lando exhaled noisily, tilting his head sideways in a familiar gesture of reluctant acceptance. You're the boss, he said, fingers moving over the comm keyboard. I just hope you know what you're doing. Ready? Han braced himself. Do it. Lando keyed a final section of code, and beneath them, the frigate twitched. Not a big twitch, not at first. But as the seconds passed, it became increasingly clear that something down there was wrong. The main engines flickered a few times, and then died, amid short bursts from the auxiliaries. Its drive toward the perimeter fighting faltered, its etheric control surfaces kicking in and then out again, striving to change course in random directions. The big ship floundered almost to a halt. And suddenly, the side of the hull directly opposite the mole miner's position erupted in a brilliant burst of flame. "It's cut all the way through," Lando gasped, his tone not sure whether to be proud or dismayed by his handiwork. A TIE fighter, perhaps answering a distress call from the stormtroopers inside, swept directly into the stream of superheated plasma before it could maneuver away. It emerged from the other side, its solar panels blazing with fire, and exploded. "It's working," Wedge called, sounding awed. "Look, it's working." Han looked up from the frigate. All around them, all throughout the orbit dock area, ships that had been making for deep space were suddenly twisting around like metallic animals in the throes of death. All of them with tongues of flame shooting from their sides. Thrawn sat in silence, staring down at his status boards, apparently oblivious to the battle still raging on all around them. Pelion held his breath, waiting for the inevitable explosion of injured pride at the unexpected reversal, wondering what form that explosion would take. Abruptly, the Grand Admiral raised his eyes to the viewport. "Have all the remaining Cloak Force TIE fighters returned to our ships, Captain?" he asked calmly. "Yes, sir," Pelion told him, still waiting. Thrawn nodded. "Then order the task force to begin its withdrawal." "Withdrawal?" Pelion asked cautiously. It was not exactly the order he'd been anticipating. Thrawn looked at him, a faint smile on his face. "You were expecting, perhaps, that I'd order an all-out attack," he asked. "That I would seek to cover our defeat in a frenzy of false and futile heroics?" "Of course not," Pelion protested. But he knew down deep that the other knew the truth. Thrawn's smile remained, but was suddenly cold. "We haven't been defeated, Captain," he said quietly. "Merely slowed down a bit. We have Wayland, and we have the treasures of the Emperor's storehouse. Sluice Van was to be merely a preliminary to the campaign, not the campaign itself. As long as we have Mount Tantis, our ultimate victory is still assured." He looked out the viewport, a thoughtful expression on his face. "We've lost this particular prize, Captain, but that's all we've lost. I will not waste ships and men trying to change that which cannot be changed. There will be many more opportunities to obtain the ships we need. Carry out your orders." "Yes, Admiral," Pelion said, turning back to his status board, a surge of relief washing through him. So there would not be an explosion after all. And with a twinge of guilt, he realized that he should have known better from the start. Thrawn was not merely a soldier, like so many others Pelion had served with. He was, instead, a true warrior, with his eye set on the final goal, and not on his own personal glory. Taking one last look out the viewport, Pelion issued the order to retreat, and wondered once again what the Battle of Endor would have been like if Thrawn had been in command. Chapter 32, The Last Chapter. It took a while longer after the Imperial fleet pulled out for the battle to be officially over. But with the Star Destroyers gone, the outcome was never in doubt. The regular stormtroopers were the easiest. Most of them were dead already, killed when Lando's activation of the mole miners had ruptured the air seals of their stolen ships and left them open to vacuum, and the rest were taken without much trouble. The 8 remaining space troopers, whose zero-G suits had allowed them to keep fighting after their ships were disabled, were another story entirely. Ignoring all calls to surrender, they fanned out through the shipyards, clearly intent on causing as much damage as they could before the inevitable. Six were hunted down and destroyed. The other two eventually self-destructed, one managing to cripple a corvette in the process. He left behind him a shipyard and orbit dock facility in an uproar, and a great number of severely damaged major ships. "Not exactly what you'd call a resounding victory," Captain Affion grunted, surveying what was left of the Larkus's bridge through a pressure bulkhead viewport as he gingerly adjusted a battle dressing that had been applied to his forehead. "Going to take a couple months' work just to rewire all the control circuits." "Would you rather the Imperials have gotten it whole?" Han demanded from behind him, trying to ignore his own mixed feelings about this whole thing. Yes, it had worked, but at what cost? "Not at all," Affion replied calmly. "You did what you had to, and I'd say that even if my own neck hadn't been on the line. I'm just saying what others will say, that destroying all these ships in order to save them was not exactly the optimal solution." Han threw a look at Luke. "You sound like Counselor Felia," he accused Affion. The other nodded. "Exactly. Well, fortunately, Felia's only one voice," Luke offered. "Yeah, but it's a loud one," Han said sourly. "And one that a lot of people are starting to listen to," Wedge added, "including important military people. He'll find some way to parlay this incident into his own political gain," Affion rumbled. "You just watch him." Han's rejoinder was interrupted by a trilling from the wall intercom. Affion stepped over and tapped the switch. "Affion here," he said. "Sluice Control Communications," a voice replied. "We have an incoming call from Coruscant for Captain Solo. Is he with you?" "Right here," Han called, stepping over to the speaker. "Go ahead." There was a slight pause, and then a familiar and sorely missed voice came on. "Han, it's Leia." "Leia," Han said, feeling a delighted and probably slightly foolish-looking grin spread across his face. A second later, though, "Wait a minute. What are you doing back on Coruscant?" "I think I've taken care of our other problem," she said. Her voice, he noticed for the first time, sounded tense and more than a little ragged. "At least for the moment." Han threw a frown across the room at Luke. "You think?" "Look, that's not important right now," she insisted. "What's important is that you get back here right away." Something cold and hard settled into Han's stomach. For Leia to be this upset. "What's wrong?" He heard her take a deep breath. "Admiral Akbar has been arrested and removed from command on charges of treason." The room abruptly filled with a brittle silence. Han looked in turn at Luke, at Affion, at Wedge. But there didn't seem to be anything to say. "I'll be there as soon as I can," he told Leia. "Luke's here, too. You went during him?" "Yes, if he can manage it," she said. "Akbar's going to need all the friends can get." "Okay," Han said. "Call me the Falcon if there's any more news. We're heading over there right now." "I'll see you soon. I love you, Han."
"Me too."
He broke the connection, turned back to the others. "Well," he said, to no one in particular, "there goes the hammer. You coming, Luke?" Luke looked at Wedge. "Have your people had a chance to do anything with my X-Wing yet?"
"Not yet," Wedge said, shaking his head. "But it's just been officially bumped to the top of priority list. We'll have it ready to fly in 2 hours. Even if I had to take the raiders out of my own ship to do it."
Luke nodded and looked back at Han. "I'll fly into Coruscant on my own then," he said. "Let me just come with you and get R2 off the Falcon." "Right. Come on." "Good luck,"
Afyon called softly after them. And yes, Han thought as they hurried down the corridor toward the hatchway where the Falcon was up. The hammer was indeed coming down. If Felia and his faction pushed too hard and too fast, and knowing Felia, he would almost certainly push too hard and too fast. We could be on the edge of a civil war here, Luke murmured his thought back at him. Yeah. Well, we're not going to let that happen, Han told him with confidence he didn't feel. We haven't gone to a war and back just to watch some over-ambitious Bothan wreck it. How are we going to stop him? Han grimaced. We'll think of something. To be continued. This concludes the reading of Star Wars Heir to the Empire by Timothy Zahn. This book was read by Larry A. McKeever. Additional titles in the Star Wars trilogy by Timothy Zahn in the Books on Tape Library include Dark Force Rising and Last Command. For additional information about them or for help with topics of related interest, please call our customer service department or check our catalog index to find review material.
We hope you enjoyed this reading. Please continue listening to sample another Books on Tape bestseller.
Star Wars, Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. Trademark and copyright 1992 by Lucasfilm Limited. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. This recording of the full reading of Star Wars Dark Force Rising was published by arrangement with Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio, a division of Bantam Doubleday Dell Publishing Group, Incorporated, and was produced in 1995 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which hold the copyright thereto. This book is read by Larry A. McKeever. Star Wars Dark Force Rising by Timothy Zahn. This book consists of 29 chapters and is 376 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book. Dark Force Rising, the number one New York Times best-selling Heir to the Empire, was the publishing event of the year, the first novel to continue the adventures of Luke Skywalker, Princess Leia, and Han Solo, beyond the events of the most popular trilogy in movie history. Now comes Dark Force Rising, the second volume of a three-book cycle authorized by Lucasfilm Limited and written by Hugo Award-winning author Timothy Zahn. 5 years after the events of Return of the Jedi, the fragile republic that was born with the defeat of Darth Vader, the Emperor, and the infamous Death Star, stands threatened from within and without. The dying Empire's most cunning and ruthless warlord, Grand Admiral Thrawn, has taken command of the remnants of the Imperial fleet and launched a massive campaign aimed at the Republic's destruction. With the aid of unimaginable weapons long hidden away by the Emperor on a backwater planet, Thrawn plans to turn the tide of the battle, overwhelm the New Republic, and impose his iron rule throughout the galaxy. Meanwhile, dissension and personal ambition threaten to tear the Republic apart. As Princess Leia, pregnant with Jedi twins, risks her life to bring a proud and lethal alien race into alliance with the Republic, Han and Lando Calrissian race against time to find proof of treason inside the highest Republic Council, only to discover instead a ghostly fleet of warships that could bring doom to their friends and victory to their enemies. But most dangerous of all is a new dark Jedi, risen from the ashes of a shrouded past, consumed by bitterness, and thoroughly, utterly insane. Now he schemes to use his awesome mastery of the Force, summon young Skywalker, allay his misgivings, cunningly enthrall him, and ultimately corrupt him to the dark side. A tale of brilliant spectacle, startling revelations, and tumultuous action, Dark Force Rising moves with the speed of light across a dazzling epic landscape of galactic proportions, from world to world, from adventure to adventure, as good and evil clash across the vastness of space, a long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Timothy Zahn is one of science fiction's most popular voices, known for his ability to tell very human stories against a well-researched background of future science and technology. He won the Hugo Award for his novella Cascade Point and is the author of 11 science fiction novels, including Cobra, The Black Collar, and War Horse, as well as two collections of short fiction. He just completed the novel Angel Mass for Bantam Spectra and is currently at work on a third novel in the new Star Wars cycle. Timothy Zahn lives on the Oregon coast. Step 1. Directly ahead, the star is a marble-sized yellow-orange ball, its intensity moderated by its distance and by the viewport's automatic sunscreens. Surrounding it and the ship itself were the stars, a spattering of blazing white pinpricks in the deep blackness of space. Directly beneath the ship, in the western part of the great northern forest of the planet Mirker, dawn was approaching. The last dawn that some in that forest would ever see. Standing at one of the side bridge viewports of the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera, Captain Pelion watched as the fuzzy Terminator line crept toward the target zone on the planet below. 10 minutes ago, the ground forces surrounding the target had reported themselves ready. The Chimera itself had been holding blockade position for nearly an hour. All that was missing now was the order to attack. Slowly, feeling almost furtive about it, Pelion turned his head a couple of centimeters to the side. Behind him, and to his right, Grand Admiral Thrawn was seated at his command station, his blue-skinned face expressionless, his glowing red eyes focused on the bank of status readouts wrapped around his chair. He hadn't spoken or moved from that position since the last of the ground forces had reported in, and Pelion could tell the bridge crew was beginning to get restless. For his own part, Pelion had long since stopped trying to second-guess Thrawn's actions. The fact that the late Emperor had seen fit to make Thrawn one of his 12 Grand Admirals was evidence of his own confidence in the man. All the more so given Thrawn's not entirely human heritage and the Emperor's well-known prejudices in such matters. Moreover, in the year since Thrawn had taken command of the Chimera and had begun the task of rebuilding the Imperial fleet, Pelion had seen the Grand Admiral's military genius demonstrated time and again. Whatever his reason for holding off the attack, Pelion knew it was a good one. As slowly as he'd turned away, he turned back to the viewport. But his movements had apparently not gone unnoticed. "A question, Captain?" Thrawn's smoothly modulated voice cut through the low hum of bridge conversation. "No, sir," Pelion assured him, turning again to face his superior. For a moment, those glowing eyes studied him, and Pelion unconsciously braced himself for a reprimand or worse. But Thrawn, as Pelion still had a tendency to forget, did not have the legendary and lethal temper that had been the hallmark of the Lord Darth Vader. "You're perhaps wondering why we haven't yet attacked," the Grand Admiral suggested in that same courteous tone. "Yes, sir, I was," Pelion admitted. "All our forces appear to be in position." "Our military forces are, yes," Thrawn agreed, "but not the observers I sent into Hilliard City." Pelion blinked. "Hilliard City?" "Yes. I find it unlikely that a man of Talon Karda's cunning would set up a base in the middle of a forest without also setting up security contacts with others outside the immediate area. Hilliard City is too far from Karda's base for anyone there to directly witness our attack. Hence, any sudden flurries of activity in the city will imply the existence of a more subtle line of communication. From that, we'll be able to identify Karda's contacts and put them under long-term surveillance. Eventually, they'll lead us to him." "Yes, sir," Pelion said, feeling a frown crease his forehead. "Then you're not expecting to take any of Karda's own people alive?" The Grand Admiral's smile turned brittle. "On the contrary, I fully expect our forces to find an empty and abandoned base." Pelion threw a glance out the viewport at the partly lit planet below. "In that case, sir, why are we attacking it?" "Three reasons, Captain. First, even men like Talon Karda occasionally make mistakes. It could well be that in the rush to evacuate his base, he left some crucial bit of information behind. Second, as I've already mentioned, an attack on the base may lead us to his contacts in Hilliard City. And third,
It provides our ground forces with some badly needed field experience. The glowing eyes bored into Pelion's face. Never forget, Captain, that our goal is no longer merely the pitiful rearguard harassment of the past 5 years. With Mount Tentus and our late Emperor's collection of Sperti cylinders in our hands, the initiative is once again ours. Very soon now, we'll begin the process of taking planets back from the rebellion. And for that, we'll need an army every bit as well trained as the officers and crew of the fleet. Understood, Admiral, Pelion said. Good. Thrawn lowered his gaze to his displays. It's time. Signal General Covell that he may begin. Yes, sir, Pelion said, leaving the viewport and returning to his station. He gave the readouts a quick check and tapped his comm switch, peripherally aware as he did so that Thrawn had likewise activated his own comm. Some private message to his spies in Hilliard City? This is the Chimera, Pelion said. Launch the attack. Acknowledged, Chimera, General Covell said into his helmet comlink, careful to keep the quiet scorn in his gut from getting through to his voice. It was typical. Typical and disgustingly predictable. You scrambled around like mad hellions, got your troops and vehicles on the ground and set up. And then you stood around waiting for those strutting fleet people in their spotless uniforms and nice clean ships to finish sipping their tea and finally get around to letting you loose. Well, get yourselves comfortable, he thought sardonically, in the direction of the Star Destroyer overhead. Because whether Grand Admiral Thrawn was interested in real results or just a good rousing show, he was going to get his money's worth. Reaching to the board in front of him, he keyed for local command frequency. General Covell to all units. We've got the light. Let's go. The acknowledgments came in, and with a shiver from the steel deck beneath him, the huge AT-AT walker was off, lumbering its deceptively awkward-looking way through the forest toward the encampment a kilometer away. Ahead of the AT-AT, occasionally visible through the armored transparent steel viewport, a pair of AT-ST scout walkers ran in twin-point formation, tracking along the AT-AT's path and watching for enemy positions or booby traps.
This concludes our program on this cassette. Please call Books on Tape Incorporated for information about it or any title we have recorded. Please wind the cassette forward to its end so it will be in order for the next listener. Thank you.